Reality Radio Entertainment presents Behind the Curtain with your host, Kathy Barrett.
Welcome to Behind the Curtain, a show about how we navigate down the not-so-yellow brick road of life. I'm Kathy Barrett, and life is something we shouldn't do alone. So I hope you'll spend the next 30 minutes with me as I reveal what's behind the curtain. Happy Valentine's Day to all you lovely people out there. It's so great to have a day dedicated to love, isn't it? We celebrate this Valentine's Day by discussing unity and peace and the healing of race relations in America with our special guest, Dr. Kitty Oliver, producer, author, oral historian, journalist, and writing professor on race and ethnic relations. Dr. Oliver has pioneered the cross-cultural Race and Change Research Project in South Florida, which has resulted in a historical archive on race and has been featured on CNN's Black in America. She is producer and host of the 10-part series Crossing Cultures, Changing Lives, and has authored 3 books. Dr. Kitty Oliver, it's so great and an honor to have you on this program today, and happy Valentine's Day to you.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day to you, too, and all of the listeners.
Well, I think your work is amazing, and before we get to it, I wanted to take a moment in the spirit of racial healing. I'd like to pay tribute to those who died at the hands of hatred and discrimination, and to those who survived, and to those who have dedicated their lives to ensure equality for all, to all of you courageous souls whose vision and determination inspired a blind nation to see again. This is Dr. Kitty Oliver performing her composition, Mighty World.
The mighty power you see, and when you take the time to ponder how we manage through it all, the wonder, the beauty, who we are. If you take the time and ponder all that you have made it through, be grateful. Be grateful for all that you are. What a mighty power have we. What a mighty love every day I choose to see. We live in a mighty, mighty world.
Those lyrics are so amazing. I mean, they really go right to your heart.
Thank you. And I guess I do believe that throughout all the experiences I've had and that we have collectively had in this country, I find that there is a lot of hope and there are so many expressions of love. Sometimes we just lose sight of it.
That's very true. And before we get on to speaking about the amazing work that you do, I mean, really groundbreaking work, I just want to share with the listeners that you were one of 35 African-American freshmen to integrate the University of Florida in 1965 out of a student body of 18,000 during a time in this country when your life was at risk for doing so. What was that experience like for you?
Well, actually, there were about 35 students of color, including international students and upper division and graduate students, but there were five of us freshmen who actually came onto the campus that fall, and there were a few others who lived at home and commuted, but the five of us had to come and live on campus for 2 years. It was a pivotal experience for me, and it really set me off on this journey I've been on about race relations and change, because I had come from an environment that was totally black in the segregated South growing up in North Florida in Jacksonville, where the only white person I might see would be an insurance man who'd come into the neighborhood, or once in a while someone my mother worked for or with might bring her home, but it was apartheid like a lot of people can't imagine perhaps anymore. So going from not having any contact with anyone of difference, certainly anyone who was white, to this environment of having to live and find a way to get along with these people who were just strange entities to me was a powerful experience. And we were there on a campus where we weren't really attacked. But there are other assaults to the spirit that can happen, like being ignored, being invisible, not counting and not mattering, which can have a profound effect on a lot of people, and not being listened to and not being heard. So it was an effort. It took me about a year to begin to find a comfort level there, and I found it in writing. I found it in an honors English class. I found it in music because I did start performing while I was on campus, and I managed to become sort of active as a result. But in that environment with those girls, over those 2 years until I moved off campus, I had a chance to see what we had in common. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, had a chance to learn the same thing about me and the roommate I was randomly assigned, who happened to be the only other black female coming in.
Wow.
But they called it a random assignment.
Yes, quite random.
And the interesting thing out of that was she came from a different part of the state with a totally different experience, and we really did not have a lot in common other than being the same color. And after a while, our paths really diverged, and she went off in one direction and I in the other, and I found girls within that living situation who I bonded with much more strongly. And so that was an awakening for me. But I will tell you one experience that became pivotal that I ended up writing about was one white girl who had come in the year after me, and I was her big sister, writing her over the summer, letting her know about things that were happening on campus and just helping her to adjust when she enrolled and when she came to campus. So we became friendly over that semester, and I guess near the end of the semester, we're having a little gap fest one evening, and she said, I want to tell you something. She said, when I saw that you were my big sister who had been writing me, and when I got to the dorm, she said, I really was upset. I couldn't stand it. I thought it was terrible, and when you invited me to go out to eat, as we did as a group, she said, I didn't want to be seen with you. She said, I don't feel that way now. And it was pivotal, I keep saying, because when we have these instances where there's conflict or potential conflict, we really have a choice in what decision we make about how to deal with it. I realized she was trying to share very honestly with me what her feelings had been and how she had changed. But I also realized there was a gap very often in perceptions across races that I needed to also be aware of.
And the key to me, too, is the way that in which you handled it, which was you had a choice and you chose to see what you had in common.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pivotal point right there, because most people kind of get sidetracked with their fears and with their ignorant understanding of what is, unknowingly sometimes. But yet you, despite everything that you were up against, you still chose to walk down the path that was positive, to look for how you can build a bridge with people, not how to disrupt the relationship.
And I think that is something I'm constantly interested in us as human beings, how some people have that ability to build bridges. And we have a lot of study and we have a lot of information and we have a lot of conversation about people who cannot or will not open their hearts and love no matter what happens, people who are bigoted, people who do discriminate. We study it, we talk about it, we look for examples that reaffirm it. And it's curious to me that we don't spend, that same kind of energy looking at people who build bridges, because that in itself is also an interesting trait. We tend to want to say, oh, yeah, well, that's nice, or, oh, you're just an optimist, or you're not a realist.
Well, that's very true.
We tend to discount that in some way.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be. I mean, that's the thing we really should be focusing on. So I wanted to talk to people out there listening or share with them what the Race and Change Project is and how it came into existence.
Well, out of this experience and then becoming a journalist living in the UF experience and then becoming a journalist in South Florida, as it was becoming increasingly diverse, I was seeing people coming from other parts of the country and then from other countries. And as immigrants and feeling like they either didn't quite fit into the area or into the U.S. culture, and also that they were dealing with what they had to lose and how they had to adapt in order to fit into American culture. And their experiences, the more they talked, were very similar to mine in being like an immigrant in that journey I just described for you, where I went from the old world to the new world. I had to adapt and change. I had loss. I had to decide how much I was going to acculturate and to build new relationships. So I started studying that. But I wanted to also hear how other people, black, white, Hispanic, and Asian around my age had dealt with that immigrant experience of racial change. People who came of age with the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. especially in the mid-60s, because we grew up in one kind of world and then the world changed.
Right.
And we had to adapt and change as a result. So it just snowballed. I began finding a study area in South Florida, in the Hollywood, Florida area, which Money Magazine had touted as having the demographics of what the U.S. was going to look like by the year 2025 in terms of its diversity. So I made that my study area, started interviewing people, interviewed about 42 people, and wrote a book and a television documentary for that aired on PBS. And then it was put in the schools. And then I started teaching this process, this race and change process, to students at Florida Atlantic University. And we went out to other parts of South Florida. And now we have an archive of 125 interviews with a cross-section of whites, blacks, Hispanics, and Asians from a variety of backgrounds, all sharing their life histories and also their experiences with race over time. And having that kind of dialogue has been very powerful, having it in the historical archives for researchers to use, having it used by students. I also did the television documentary series that you mentioned, Crossing Cultures, Changing Lives, where I interviewed even more people going into the homes and lives of people who are living with differences to have what I call a more normalized conversation about our differences, like you and I would have now, or like we have in the living room, around the dinner table. But have it be a public conversation where people talk about their experiences in a non-confrontational way. So all of this has gone from the archives to the television show to radio now, and now with the multimedia website, the Race and Change Initiative. We have an iTunes channel called Voices of Race and Change. Several histories there. There are podcasts on race relations and change, and there's now an intergenerational component called Voices of Race and Change, the younger generation, where college students and immigrant teenagers are recording their stories, and we're putting them up on the web.
That is really exciting. I just am so inspired by this work, because it's not only important to document, but it's really important to have these conversations with each other. And that's the only way to keep building the bridges with each other, is to learn what we, as you pointed out so beautifully, is to learn what we have in common, to see that we're all connected, and to be able to, you know, have these conversations, again, as you pointed out, with the freedom that you can speak, despite the fact if there is someone just discovering that, oh my God, I didn't even realize that I was discriminating. You know, there's a lot of people that don't recognize the behavior. So to be able to talk and converse about it and be in communities and keep opening that conversation, I think is really, really important to the continuance of healing racism in America.
It's important on two levels. In terms of society, very definitely, the more we can talk, as I call it, in a non-confrontational way, instead of waiting for these little hot-button issues to arise, and then we start having the flurry of opinion and anger and claims and counterclaims, and then it dissolves, and we really, you know, we go to our separate corners. Having this kind of dialogue becomes a personal growth experience, as the people who have been interviewed have told me, because it is asking them to think about and verbalize some things they really hadn't processed before. And so it's a conversation we don't have a lot of experience yet
right.
in having. And so the more, mainly because nobody has asked or no one has listened.
Right.
And so by giving that opportunity where people can talk about your experiences, not about what you heard, about the generalizations that we tend to use, but what did you experience? What was it like then? And how have you changed? Or how did things change as a result of it? And that's what Rates and Change Project is always about. It is about not just the conflicts and difficulties you may have had, but how did you grow from that? Why was that so important that you continue to remember it? What decision did you make around that as a result?
Really great stuff. I would like to stop and play a clip that you sent me, and why don't you tell the listeners what it is?
All right. This is an excerpt from one of the oral histories we collected in the area around in Delray Beach, which is near the Lake Okeechobee area. Anyway, this was a woman who was one of the first black students at a white high school in the mid-1960s and had some traumatic experiences and all. But she's sharing something that happened to her much later on in life that became so profound.
And here we go.
I went to a seminar because of the my church that I go to and the things that I'm involved with. We're multicultural as well. I went to a seminar on inner healing, and integration happened to be an issue that came up for me as someone was talking to me, and a white male and a white female ended up, and a Chinese female ended up coming before me and apologizing for all of the hurt and the pain that had been caused. And it was good. It was good. It was caused healing. Caused healing to come. I didn't go looking for it. It just came to me.
And it's so powerful. I mean, it really moved me. It just took two words, spoken compassionately and from the heart, to soothe the emotional scars that this woman carried with her probably for most of her life.
Mm-hmm. And in our encounters, I think that's one of the questions we need to ask. What is your intention? What is your purpose? Is it to make a point? Is it to be right? Is it to stay where you are? Or is it to listen and learn? And if your intention is to listen and learn, we all grow in the process, as she did. She was able to lay down some of those burdens of that, the pain of that integration experience, just by the action of those people at that meeting.
Really something. And how do you attract people to come and tell their stories to your archive?
At this point, it's a matter of selecting an area that to study, and we have them around the country if there's anybody who's interested in doing this kind of work. Any area where you have an influx of a lot of new people, where the community is changing, is ripe for this kind of discussion because it's a way of drawing people in across cultures. So the areas I have gone to have been the communities that have been experiencing racial and ethnic change.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have been receptive to having an oral historian come in who is going to try to touch bases with a lot of segments of their community and then have them all reflected by having their stories. The interesting thing, and I did just want to quickly say, is the same instrument, the same interview questions I ask wherever I go in the project, I've taken to Ghana, West Africa, and I have 6 interviews already done there. So imagine asking people in Africa questions about race.
Wow.
Because race really, in this general global way, is about differences. However you describe those differences, but it's where people are classified as the other and treated in a certain way that can end up causing schisms in society. But they were also able to look at ethnic differences in their country as well as racial differences in the U.S.
That's really amazing. I want to tell everyone that if you want to find out more information about Dr. Kitty Oliver, she has written three fantastic books, and about all of the different programs that she's created and involved in, go to www.kittyoliveronline.com. And anything else you want to mention, Dr. Oliver, other websites for people?
Well, I think the most important thing is this, that this is an intergenerational work. We may start with stories about the past and having people begin to reflect on how that shaped their attitudes and who they are today, but then to have those stories shared with younger people who are longing for us elders to fill in the gaps and give them some hope.
Mm.
So it's more than just digging up the past and trying to come to terms with it. It's coming to terms with it so that the message from our past, which is one, I believe, of hope and progress and resilience over difficult odds, can be passed on now to the younger generation to know that they, too, can deal with, confront, and overcome whatever issues they're going to be encountering. And I find that young people are hungry to hear these kind of stories.
That's an excellent point to bring up. And I can't believe the time has just flown by. It's just insane, isn't it? I wanted to talk to you about so much more, so you will have to come back. I hope you will come back, because I'd like to get deeper into some of these projects. And also, I'm in the process of reading your book, Multicolored Memories of a Black Southern Girl, and you take us on such an amazing personal journey as you research your ancestry. It's just so beautifully written. I mean, your style, it's just incredible. It's just very prose-like. I really go off into a different universe when I'm reading this book. And all of the compassion and the love that you put in everything that you do, you really feel it when you hear you sing and when you read your words. And so it's really been an honor to have you on the program. And I, again, strongly recommend that you folks go out and tap into all of the fabulous things that Dr. Kitty Oliver has to offer you. So go to www.kittyoliveronline.com. It was an honor. I hope you'll come back. I too, want to apologize to anyone who has had to endure discrimination. We are connected. We are one. We are all part of the same human race.
What a lovely way to end our chat.
Well, I'm going to bring the folks out with another song that you composed and wrote the lyrics for and sing, called Sing Spirit. I just want to remind folks that next week we have Bryony Bax, who began the Orphan Support League in 2007. She has been working tirelessly for orphans and displaced children around the world. Now, Bryony will be coming to us live from across the pond in the UK. This is very exciting for Behind the Curtain, as the show officially places us in the global market. So please tune in and help me welcome our British friends. This is Kathy Barrett and Dr. Kitty Oliver, sending you a virtual hug from behind the curtain. So great to have you along on this journey, and I'll be back next week, and I hope you'll join me. And here is Sing Spirit by Dr. Kitty Oliver.